Hello everyone, I'm thrilled to welcome Roberto Alvarez to the IJK podcast today. Rob is an international TEDx speaker and a passionate advocate for the transformative power of gamification. Since 2017, Rob has been hosting the Professor Game podcast, where he interviews successful practitioners of gamification to help companies and institutions foster engagement and loyalty through game-based solutions. In addition to his podcast, Rob serves as an adjunct professor at IE Business School, where he facilitates learning on gamification and other topics within the operations and supply chain management areas. Today, we will learn with Rob how gamification can help companies elevate the customer experience and boost brand loyalty. Rob, welcome to the IJK podcast.
Thanks for the invitation. I'm excited to be on fellow podcasters' podcasts because I love the format. And I know, you know, the audiences are fantastically engaged in many ways. So it's a format that I really, really enjoy. So delighted to be here, essentially.
Likewise, we are delighted to have you with us today, Rob. Rob, for listeners who are new to this concept of gamification, how would you define gamification in simple words? And why do you think, most of all, it's a powerful tool for businesses today?
So there's no sort of, if you look up, you know, digital marketing or marketing in general, there's books, you know, that have the formal definition and so on. We have many books in the gamification field, but I don't think we've formally agreed anyway what's the actual definition. So I'll give you what I use in my classes and with my clients. It tends to be a bit of an umbrella. What I like to say is that, you know, gamification is when you take the elements of games, game design, and play in general, for purposes, and you use it for purposes that go beyond entertainment, right? Because games are usually their core are an entertainment piece, right? So this is for things that can be entertaining as well, but that they go beyond. They want to do something else. You want to achieve some objective. You want to help people stay loyal to their own fitness. You want to help people stay, you know, engaged with their own learning, for example. There's many ways in which this can work, but the idea is that those other objectives are there. And I think it's very relevant and very useful in today's, you know, business and learning world in general, because if you think about it, you know, games have been, and not only video games, which is what our minds tend to go straight to video games when you hear this, but games in general, sports, you know, the Olympics that have been around for literally millennia, all these things, they have elements, they have ways of keeping those who are participating engaged in the best of ways, right? So you're really trying to get better, you're really trying to push. And there are so many instances in this world where we would benefit from that kind of reaction to product services, NGOs, causes in general. There's many, many places where, and education definitely, which has been, you know, for many years, it was the center, the core of my foundation, that would definitely benefit from having that power within them. That I think, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to find a place where it would actually sort of not apply nowadays. Mm-hmm.
I see. Can you share an example of a gamified experience that you think is worth sharing or that left a strong impression on you as a specialist in the field?
I'll share two with you because they're very different. Now, one is, you know, when you think of gamification, people tend to think of some heavily gamified, something that looks like a game. And something like Duolingo is like pretty obvious in that sense, right? You have a bunch of points, you have the streaks, you have the gems, you have a leaderboard, like you have a bunch of things that you would think of when you think of a game. And it's a very good example as well. I like to use this one because amongst many other things, they think of language learning in the way that I think, even though maybe some other people thought about it before, they didn't really have the tools to do that. And it's learning a language usually is all about regular practice. Whether you do half an hour a day or 5 minutes a day, it's always better than, you know, getting to the end of the month and trying to catch up with, you know, 8 hours of straight learning, because then you spend another month and I don't want to say you forget, but it's not as impactful and as strong as, you know, taking those 30 minutes a day, again, 10 minutes a day. So they use a streak mechanic. You know, you go in one day and then you go in the next day. Now you have a 2-day streak and then a 3-day and eventually a 100-day or a 1,000-day streak. And even if just to keep that streak going, you don't want to miss a day. You want to even log in those 5 minutes. You know, you're at a dinner. It's late in the day and you sort of get off and go to the bathroom to just log in your 5 minutes. So I think it's very useful and it aligns very well the objectives of I want to learn a language. So, you know, to achieve it, I need to do this. And the objectives of the company, which of course is to keep people there and eventually probably pay some money to them through their different models. And the other one is LinkedIn. You know, you wouldn't think of LinkedIn, and that's why I like these two separate examples. You wouldn't think of LinkedIn as a sort of gamified place or a game, and it depends on how you see it. But in general, people don't see it as a game, right? So when you logged in, I don't know if you remember when you created your LinkedIn account, they probably asked for you, I don't remember exactly, but it's probably something like the name, the email, and the password. And that's it, right? Seeing it now, you realize that your profile is not valuable just with that information. Not for you, not for LinkedIn, not for anybody. But it is also true that if in the registration form, it gave you all of the things that you then fill in into your profile, you probably would have never signed up. So how do you bridge that gap, right? How do you go from having name, email, and password to having a full profile where you have absolutely everything that you need to have a great profile that gets noticed and so on? Well, you do it step by step. That's the first thing. But one thing they realized that had a huge impact, and programming it, there was a conference in which the programmer, one of the lead programmers there, was involved. And he said, look, the actual programming took like 10 minutes. But getting to that solution was what really gathered a lot of thought. And it was literally as simple as creating a progress bar where you see how far away you are from completing your profile. And it sparks your curiosity as well. You see and you say, I'm at like 2%. Why? I already gave you my name, my email. You have my password. What else do you want? Right? So if you click there, it tells you what's the next thing that you could do. And then, now you have 4%. Our brains are trying to complete things, right? You don't want to see an incomplete percentage. You don't want to feel that your profile is incomplete. So that's one of the things that got people to go there. And I don't know the numbers because I didn't work on that project and I didn't work at LinkedIn. But as far as I can remember, it was like 1,500% of what they had before was the conversion and the actual people getting to complete their profiles versus not having something like that. And again, I like it because of its relative simplicity in the implementation, right? You don't feel that you completely change the whole strategy of the app. It's not a super complicated thing. But then the impact can be significant if, again, if you do it right, if it's thoughtful, if it's not just slapping, game elements, what's a game element? A badge. You throw in badges and see what happens. They really thought about what they wanted to achieve and how it became valuable, again, to the user and to LinkedIn. Those two things come together. If your profile is more complete, you have a more valuable profile. And well, LinkedIn, of course, they have your data and all these things that works for them, especially at an aggregate level.
Of course, of course. I like your two examples, especially the first one, Duolingo. I used to use that app a lot. Now I have less time, but I remember very well when I was learning my Greek language. It was a very handy and very addictive mobile app. So I used to come back to it day after day to do exactly what you just mentioned, like improve my score and then keeping up with my streak. But we're going to get back to that in more details. Now I'd like to learn a little bit more about your journey into this very exciting field, gamification. So what drew you into this field in the first place? How did you develop that interest to work on game-based solution for and applying that to businesses and companies and whatnot?
So if we go really, really far back, like depending on how far back you want to go, I would say I started when I was a kid playing Nintendo, right? I wanted to work for the Nintendo magazine and play games all day. But of course that ended eventually. I grew up. But the love for games was always sort of dormant there in a way. Like I eventually stopped playing most of the video games. I played a little bit more board games and did some sports. But the typical gamer thing, I didn't go through it through part of a significant part of my, youth and adulthood later. But when I came here, actually, I moved to Spain, which is where I live now. I started working at a business school called IE Business School. It's a top university here in Spain. They've done online since, before almost anyone did online learning. And when they created this department where I started working at, they realized that there was, when you do online, there is what designers call affordances. So yeah, you have the face-to-face affordances. Initially, they tried to translate that into the online world, but then they realized, not everything is translatable, but there's also things you can do online that you don't do necessarily in the physical world. And they started creating online learning materials. So it was not just that they transformed the book into a PDF so you could have it digitally. It became sort of started becoming more. And they've been doing it for like 2024 years now. When I joined, they had been doing it for over a decade, and they were kind of doing a bit of gamification in their learning in many ways without either calling it gamification, or I'd like to think that it was not intentional in that department, at least at that point. So I realized this, plus, you know, it sort of woke up the dormant side of a gamer that was in me still there. And I started researching more, and I started doing something. It went, I don't want to say horribly wrong, because, you know, I had a great great manager who helped me, you know, guide through and make sure it went great. But initially it was a catastrophe. I did horrible things, and then it got massively improved. And that journey started there. You know, one of the things we started doing was sharing that with other universities as a business school. You know, they started selling it, of course. And yep. I realized this could get really far. But then I said, look, I did a stint in radio back home many years ago, and I really enjoyed the medium. And I said, well, how can I make this more accessible to a lot more people? Because I do think that the power of this is very, very broad and very big. So I started the podcast. That was back in 2017, as you mentioned. I haven't definitely not looked back. I have a new guest or a new episode at least every single week. I have probably 320 or something past guests, plus wow. my solo episodes and a few who have repeated.
And you've reached your milestone.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny, like when I started, my mom and my wife were saying, like, how many people are you going to find that are dedicated or have done something about this? Because, you know, that this is kind of like not even niche. It's like sub niche. And it is true. Like my download numbers are not going to be in the millions probably in a very long time, because it's something that some people are interested in. But I do believe that the impact is something that everyone, almost everyone, could be interested in. So there, I started doing that. Eventually, I decided to take this full time a couple of years ago. And, you know, I did sort of small consulting, and I did a lot of workshops. Being at a university, I started teaching as well, and I continued to do that. But then eventually, you know, it became too much having a full-time job, plus some consulting, plus some teaching, plus speaking around the world and doing, you know, all that stuff. So I went all in. And I haven't looked back. Like it's been fantastic. I've been working with incredible, incredible people. I love, you know, coaching people to do, you know, what they do, to help people get to that point where they understand this a lot better and they're able to apply it by themselves. And even me, myself, sitting down and creating designs and creating stuff to you know, to make it happen, essentially. That's where I've been. And that's the journey where I'm at right now. And I'm also talking about spreading the word. I'm starting a community as well. Around this whole topic, so that, again, more people can find this accessible and implement it if they're interested in it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for sharing your story. Now, I mean, since you're the specialist here, could you break down the key elements that you think make a gamified experience successful?
So usually, like, this is a question that many people are thinking in their mind. So thank you for asking that, because I think this is the typical thing that people are thinking. However, the answer that you might be expecting usually is something like, oh, do this thing and it'll work great, or do this other thing and it'll work great. Like, again, use a theme or a narrative, or and those are great, or points or badges or whatever elements that you're thinking in gamification. But I like to sort of turn it around, and it's more about, more than which ones are the ones that have had success, it's why have they had success? And the reason that they have had success is because, well, either, you know, mere luck, I just threw it there and it worked, which I think would be the vast minority of this. But more usually, it's because it was, as I said before with LinkedIn and the Duolingo examples, it's because it was a thoughtful implementation of these elements. It's about understanding, you know, and I like to run people through sort of several steps. It's, you know, really understanding what are you trying to solve and who you're solving it with. So sort of a deep understanding of, well, I break it down in three steps, right? So it's the deep understanding of the problem that you're facing. Forgetting for a second, I know it's really, really hard to not focus on the solution. I've heard this kind of thing from other people, but I've heard it myself. A client comes in and says, oh, yeah, I saw this, you know, racing car game, a gamification strategy for this, you know, for example, sales people, and I want to implement it in my company. It's like, you're jumping into the solution before understanding if that solution that they implemented is right for the problem that you're trying to solve. So it's understanding that the problem and the people you're trying to solve that with. Then is when you get excited and you start building and creating and prototyping things so that you can actually play test and iterate based on the experience that you got on that. So again, more than saying use leaderboards or theme or narrative or feedback or progress bars, as I mentioned before, which are very successful, it's about, well, does a progress bar here make sense? Because what am I trying to achieve for LinkedIn? Brilliant, perfect. They're trying to get people from a certain point to another point, right? They literally have to do things and that completion mode takes over their situation. In Duolingo, the streaks, you know, just like in games, I have a mobile game that I love playing right now, which is Clash of Clans. You know, going in every day gives you a series of benefits, right? So you could take these strategies from games, and there are many more that we haven't even thought of, or games I haven't played for sure, and implement that in your own situations, if it makes sense. The key there is understanding the whole process.
For sure. So based on what you're saying, it's always a case by case, and there's no one size fits all solution. It depends on the problem statement, and it depends on the specificities of this or that business or company, right? This is kind of what you're saying.
I would definitely say that it's you're the expert in digital marketing here, so I don't want to get into that arena myself, but I'm sure that the digital marketing campaign of company A that you worked with, if you like grab that and throw it in another company, it's just not going to work. Not even being a competitor that has relatively similar stuff. If you just dump it there and don't thoughtfully think about what's going on there, it's just not going to work.
For sure, for sure. I agree totally. However, allow me to ask my next question, which is maybe a little bit more general. Then there must be some commonalities or some best practices that could put you in a good position to start off with a success, or like that can set you up for success. So, and based on what you already said, I can guess a couple of things. So one, you mentioned this addictive aspect. So whomever is implementing a game-based solution should think about addiction in a positive way, for sure, not in a negative, pejorative way. That's one. And the second aspect is this milestone completion aspect as well, right? Which we also mentioned now a couple of times. Do you think those two elements are essential elements in any successful gaming experience that you would implement?
I think like the one that you started with, I definitely agree with, because if you think about it through those lens, it is going to lead you to a different place. Like again, the addiction in the good way. If that's what you're looking for example, and I mentioned at the start, gyms, right? Or physical fitness or things where you need people to come back over and over again. If that's something that's going to benefit you and your client, you definitely have to think in those terms. And there's a study, I'm not sure if it was MIT or Harvard, done in Boston, that they sort of created a gym where you pay your monthly fee, but you also commit to going X amount of times a week. If you don't go that amount of times a week, and depending on how many times you miss, you get fined. So you have to pay more money for not going. So the incentive...
Is this for real? Is this business model for real?
You can look it up. I don't know if they still work that way, but they did a study and they increased, I'm not sure if registrations, which would probably also be boosted, but the amount of time that people went to the gym and the regularity they did, it boosted, right? Because you put the incentive in the right place. People need to go there often, so you push them in one way or another to go there more often. And what's the result? If you start thinking 10 steps ahead, if people go more to the gym and they start seeing the results of going to the gym, are they going to sign in again for the next month or the next year?
So attrition rate goes down if they are compliant, right?
Exactly.
So they are more likely to stick around.
Because that is the thing for a gym. If you think about it, I like to talk about real estate. My mom used to work in real estate. It's a completely different business, right? If they're selling to individuals, like families and so on, it's typically a single-time transaction. Maybe you're interested in referrals, yes. However, it is true that you can fully set a business without, you know, having referrals necessarily, right? You could depend on marketing and other things. So they're not really interested in you sticking around. So them thinking of how you come back every day makes no sense for them, right? So again, there's not too many examples like that, but there's many other instances as well. So the thing is, think about it in those terms. You want people to keep coming back. Think about how to keep them coming back. You need them to come once. Think about how to bring them that one time. And, you know, in my opinion, give them the best experience and make sure everything goes well. And in the terms of levels, yeah, usually that works pretty well. People seeing how they progress through is something that works pretty well. There's actually a fellow colleague that they're literally solely focused on sort of showing people where they're at their journey, and they're finding, you know, that this is something that triggers loyalty in the long run. Like, not just for, you know, I'll stay here working at this company for the next month, but rather seeing how they progress in the company, how they grow personally and professionally is something that they've seen very good results with. Literally, they don't give any points. They don't show the levels per se. It's just how you see yourself, your individual journey, going through all these different stages that you go through. So yes, those are definitely elements that I would find there. And the other one is, you know, something that might almost be, you know, more broadly seen in entrepreneurship. They talk about iteration and pivoting and, you know, building things fast and breaking stuff so that you can learn, you know, what mistakes you made and be able to act upon those mistakes early, right? So that you don't spend a year building something that then nobody wants. Well, it kind of works the same way in gamification. That's definitely a big best practice that I would encourage everybody to go for. Is you can go big, but don't go big before you make, you know, your first interaction with some of your players.
All right. Okay. We've talked already about Duolingo a little bit, but maybe let's talk a bit more about that and about gamification examples in other industries like... Yeah, I mean, what comes to mind is, for example, Starbucks Rewards, which is a very global and important program. So, as I said before, Duolingo is personally one of my exposures or experiences with gamification. Other things or other examples may not be necessarily, I or other consumers may not necessarily be aware of them, that they're actually participating in a gamification process, right? So, any loyalty program is considered, like let's say Starbucks Reward, is considered in one way or another part of this universe.
So this is part of the logo of my company. These are some glasses. I didn't think about it that way initially, but it makes even more sense right now. I like to think of, you know, sort of when you dive a little bit deeper into this world, not just seeing the definition, but actually, you know, maybe try it once or twice. You start and you read maybe a book or two. You start sort of seeing things through some lenses, so different lenses. In my case, of course, I've been doing this for many years. Almost, you know, I don't want to say almost anything, but there's way too many things that I see and I say, well, look, that is working just like, and you say like in the game, a gamified example. So there's so many things that you could say, whether intentionally, subconsciously, or, you know, it didn't even happen, but they could be potentially inspired by games. Good strategies, good loyalty strategies, could definitely be inspired by games. Think about how do mobile games keep people hooked, especially the free-to-play games, right? You have like 99% of the people don't pay a cent, and they're not really producing a dime to the company. But that 1% of what they, I think the name they use is whales, is those people who invest sort of heavily in these games, is what keeps the company going. But those whales wouldn't be there if they didn't have the other 99% of people to say, well, I'm above that level, right?
I see.
So if you think about it in those terms, almost any loyalty thing could in one way or another relate to that or a similar example. Okay. So yes, I would say loyalty is definitely a prime example of gamified strategies. But having said that, it doesn't mean that they're good examples always.
Uh-huh.
For example,
what do you mean by that? Yeah.
Think of most airline companies. And I'm not talking about the financial business model behind it, because I recently was made aware that this is a huge business thing for these companies. They make a ridiculous amount of money. I still don't really understand how, but apparently these loyalty programs do that. But think of it from the perspective of you as a customer, right? You have these loyalty cards and they say, well, if you fly through American Airlines or United Airlines or I don't know, Iberia here in Spain or whatever, right? If you fly through that and you use your card, you get X points. And these points, every 1,000 points earns you a mile. Not directly, but it's literally literally, you could translate that into money. Oftentimes, you can even sell those miles. But beyond selling them, this translates into economic value. So what it comes down to when you're making the transaction has nothing to do with whether you are loyal to that company or not. It has to do with, is this transaction worth me switching from, let's say, your American Airlines usual flyer, and that's the card you use. You see an offer in Delta Airlines, and you say, is me switching, you know, is this cheap enough for me to switch? The answer is yes, you're just going to switch. It doesn't matter if you've been using this card for 20 years and you're a million miler. If the transaction in your situation makes sense, you're just going to make it. So I don't like those examples too much because they're way too transactional. In the end, you could give, you know, you could if instead of doing that, you reduced your prices, you would get similar results in terms of who would I choose, right?
Okay.
That's my argument. I have not done any field tests on this. You know, airlines don't want to make these kinds of tests because these are, you know, multi-billion dollar decisions. And again, there's another model behind it that has nothing to do with the loyalty of their customers. If you think about it, and I like an example of a friend who lives in the UK, he was talking about real loyalty. Real loyalty looks like they used to go to this place where they bought their meat, right? Which used to be relatively close, but then they moved super far away. So they literally had to commute to purchase their meat. They did it even though there were other places that were, you know, even probably cheaper, a lot closer, a lot more convenient. They went there because of the special treatment they got, because they knew exactly what quality of meat they would get. The person there knew their names. Like, the whole experience made them loyal to that specific place. I go to cut my hair. I've been there for, I want to say on and off, because eventually when I moved, I lived around the corner, literally. I moved to, you know, 20 blocks away. I can still make it walking, but I have 20 other places to cut my hair. When I moved, I tried two or three. Eventually, I said, look, this doesn't make any sense. Nobody knows how to cut my hair. And the price decision was very similar. Like, it wasn't, and it's not like it's super prime, luxury, whatever. But this person treats me well, knows exactly what I need, and I've been going there for a while. So
because you trust also the place, maybe.
Exactly.
Right?
So exactly.
Sometimes it's about the intangibles, things that you don't necessarily measure right away, but you in your conscious or maybe even unconscious, you know for a fact that this differentiates that provider from this other provider.
And even if sometimes, like, especially with, I don't want to say that you know, places where they do your hair are not doing it, but usually it's not going to be the case. But this kind of experience or these elements that help you keep coming back. And again, I go back there because I have a better experience. So it's beneficial for me as well. I do it because I like to. It's not because, oh, if I go there, I get these points. In fact, I'm just now thinking, my wife used to go to this very, this place here in Spain. The Chinese community is pretty broad, but they tend to have a specific type of business. One of them is cutting hair for women. It's cheaper, but not so much cheaper that you would say, oh, it's because of price. But they had this, you know, come 10 times and we'll give you a haircut for free. My wife, it's true that she eventually went, like, she went the first 3-4 times, it was okay. But then 4-5 was not great. 6 was starting to get, you know, not great. By the time she was by 8, she wanted to quit, but she didn't quit. She went 2 more times. It is true, they got
to get the reward, right?
Yes. She went 2 or 3 more times to get the reward. But she didn't stay there. Like, after that, she would never go back again.
She switched. Okay.
Completely, immediately. Like she said, she got her free haircut and she never came back. Again,
so it was
that,
purely
that's
transactional.
Exactly.
In that example, it's purely transactional.
And that's what when if, for example, if I fly usually through Iberia, right? Because it's in Spain for other reasons. But when I see another transaction, if I were to, for example, I had very bad experiences with them, if that were the case, I would start looking other places. And when I clear up on my miles and use them as best as I can, then I would, like, never come back. Why? Because the experience is bad. And that is at the core of what you are building. If you want to build true loyalty, it's not just about the gimmicks that you put around it, loyalty cards and whatnot. Starbucks, people who go to Starbucks every day or several times a week or whatever, they don't go for getting a free coffee every 10 visits or whatever. They go there because they like being there, because it's a good experience.
Because they like the brand. Correct. They like the brand. They identify with the brand. They have this good experience, as you mentioned.
Exactly. Exactly. So it is key to even if you use these gimmicks, if you're going to use them, it's so that you get people hooked onto something that then they will want to continue experiencing, because otherwise it doesn't make sense.
I agree. I mean, talking about customer experience and gamification. Gamification for sure has transformed in certain cases the different touch points and the customer experience as a whole. Can we talk a little bit more about that? Like, how do you see that this customer experience transformed when you introduced gamification? Is it changed substantially, or it's actually upgraded to a level of engagement that is not seen if you don't implement gamification?
I think, again, whether fully intentionally or maybe not, maybe sort of subconsciously, I do think that many things are getting gamified without the name or without necessarily thinking about it that way. Many of these things are happening, but the impact is massive. Like, one of the things that I like a lot, for example, about games, video games in particular nowadays, because board games cannot apply this, is that I used to be a freak because I was the only one who read the manuals of these Nintendo very old games, right? That was weird. Most people didn't read the manuals. I liked to read those manuals. I'm not even sure why. I just enjoyed it. Nowadays, the games don't even bring those manuals. You don't have a manual because the effort, even if it takes, you know, a day's work of one single person, that work is not worth it because, one, nobody's going to read it first and foremost. But second, you can build a much better experience for the player, whatever it is that they're going to experience in the game, by building something that does not require a user's manual, right? So how do you do that in such a way? How do you build that experience so that people do not need an instructions manual, like in these video games? And I use the example of my game on the phone, Clash of Clans, again. When you start that game, you start and there's this like lady like, oh, our village is being attacked. And they call you chief. Chief, can you help save us? Literally, what you have to do is click anywhere on the screen, anywhere. And I'm not exaggerating, because when you click, it's going to place a cannon that defends you against these goblins that are attacking you. Now you're the hero, right? You're the hero of the village. You saved everyone with this cannon. But now you also know how to place a cannon in your village, because eventually, if you see, you know, a screen of a fully fledged base, you have, like, I don't know, 7 cannons, archer towers, you know, all these bunch of defenses out there. The next thing is they say, well, now we have to take revenge. I'm not advocating for revenge in any way, but within the context of the game,
in a game setting, yeah.
And they say, oh, we have the support of these wizards of the mountain. They're going to help us do this attack. So you get, like, I don't know, like 5 wizards that, again, no matter where you place them, they're going to take over the goblin base because they're so strong that they're going to overpower them. But now you know how to place those troops. So now you know how to defend and attack. That is the basis of the whole game, defending and attacking all the time. That's all you do. If you simplify it, that's all you do. Of course, all of the complexities that it builds upon after that, if they gave it to you on the onboarding experience or on a manual, most people, maybe except for me, would not do it, wouldn't go into doing that because you wouldn't understand it well. It would be difficult. It would be complicated. It would be not really understandable. You wouldn't really get it. And you would, you know, just get out because this is a bit too much for me. So
I see.
That whole onboarding experience, even if you take almost, well, that maybe could be a thing that you could take for, I don't know, like 90% of cases. Make sure that when somebody comes in new, that their experience is good and that everything that they're able to do with your brand, your product, your app, whatever it is that you're doing, is seamless enough so that they can build that journey and get to the place where you want to get them, where they get the full experience and the full value of what you're delivering for them. That has to be seamless. They really have to go through that and feel like it's simple, even though it's not. Yep. Think of LinkedIn. Again, yeah, you're,
exactly.
You register,
I mean,
with 2 things, and then you, oh, the job you do now and your education. Yeah. Eventually, you have a full profile.
Yeah, I was about not to mention that example again, actually, but you did it before. So, but again, talking about like typical pain points of customers. Let's say I'm a company. I know that my customers have certain pain points. If we take the example of LinkedIn, maybe one of the pain points was, you know, customers create or users create a profile, but they never fill it. Now that they've introduced that gamified aspect, it has automatically increased the compliance rate or the conversion rate for users who are now completing more frequently and more fully their profiles. But a part of LinkedIn, if we look at other industries, like maybe not necessarily digital. I mean, digital probably has a very big affinity with gamification because it's all done on the computer most of the time. But even, do you think even non-digital businesses, like traditional, like standard businesses, can also benefit from that gamification aspect in one way or another?
For sure. For sure. And again, there's many ways. If you think of, I've been talking about sort of loyalty and long-term engagement, and I truly believe that there's a lot of power there. But if you think about it in terms of something that is more, I don't know how to call it, sort of immediate or you know, a one touch point or one thing or one off. Think of escape rooms, right? They're escape rooms, you go in and you're never coming back to that escape room. It's boring. You already know what the clues are. You wouldn't want to win it just faster, right? It doesn't, well, usually you wouldn't want to do it again. So you can build that kind of experience as well for somebody, like, again, depending on what you want them to do. That, you know, Easter egg hunt or that kind of thing inside a store, it could be something that you do this, and the store could be a physical store. Oh, you'll find these things and you get a reward, or you will be shown, you're able to, and that's another thing. We usually think in terms of giving users more. Well, how about thinking of it in the exact opposite terms? They have very few things to choose from, right? Very few. And the rest of things they can only access if.
If they succeed in completing something.
So, you know, not necessarily, because if you do it in terms of purchase only, like, oh, if you purchase 10 items, then you can purchase, you know, these other items. That's kind of simplistic. But there could be things that you build on them, you know, like coming back to the store many times. If that's something that you've seen, people who come to the store many times become loyal customers, for example. How do you get them to come back to the store? You know, do events, do things that get them to come to the store because they're interested in it. But that also helps them build up their profile, so to speak. And then they have access to new things. There's a Lego, this is sort of a digital thing because being part of the Lego Insiders, you sort of register and that's it. But if you think of it in terms of the concept, it's I am part of a group within Lego, again, digital or not digital, where I have access to things that other people don't. Yes, offers and discounts, but also access to Lego sets that other people don't have access to. They give me a discount for this or that, but if I purchase, I don't remember what the numbers were. I haven't used this too much, but if you purchase, I think it was something like 300 euros in the page, then you get access to this set that is not for sale.
Yes.
They don't sell it. It's only for people who are in the insiders and purchase more than X. So again, you're getting the behavior that you're expecting, people to purchase, you know, more than X. And people are getting something they really want. They see that this set, it's probably not a huge set. It's not going to be super expensive, but it's cute. It's nice. You like it. And you get it just because you are there. Right?
Yeah.
And again, this could be gimmicky. I haven't used it too much myself. Like I haven't gotten the sets yet.
Yep.
I like Lego. I love it. But when it comes to a super high-end, you know, 400 euro Lego pieces, I'm a bit more
hesitant,
more standoffish on those, because you know, here in Madrid, homes are small as well, so you don't have too much space anyway, so I'm a bit more hesitant anyway. But I think overall it seems like it could be an interesting strategy to limit access to people instead of giving them everything, because there's a good example in restaurants. Typically there's some restaurants which have like a book for your menu. It's like, has like 50
and it has
pages.
So many. Yes, I can relate to those.
And what I do in those lost. Is I go to the end page, at least here in Spain, the end page has the fixed menus and they have like 10 options, and that's all I'm gonna look at. Maybe it's intentional, they want me to look at that one, but in any case, too many options is too much.
Yeah. And
when is it too much? It's harder to find.
End up not making any decision in the end.
And there's other things, like you think if there's too much on the menu, then probably there's a higher chance of those things being frozen because you cannot have an inventory. I'm also an operations professor. The chance of that inventory being frozen and not freshly cooked and that are higher. So it's maybe not the place, or maybe going for the one that's always purchased, which are the menus, gives you better chances at that. But even beyond that, it's confusing. So you limit the options to a few, you because that's part of what you do as a restaurant. You're curating the content that people are going to consume, because otherwise they just go to the supermarket and buy anything they want. Part of your job is to curate that into the select few things that you know they're going to have a great experience at. Like I always like people to think in terms of sometimes how less is more in that sense. And that is a very good element. And then maybe you can have more things added on later. But don't give people at the first run everything. Like imagine you know, this is not typical, but imagine you walk into, I don't know, McKinsey, right? And you're going to be a potential client, but you've never heard of exactly what they do. And somebody comes in and gives you the list of every single one of their products that they have. Never going to read it. You're never going to be a client that way.
Right? Correct.
They're going to ask you first, what do you need? What are your needs? What's your type of company? And there they give you a select one, two, or maybe three things that they will be able to help you with. So you become a client.
Yeah, absolutely. Rob, going back to the digital world now again, and this example came to mind because I actually was exposed to it a few days ago. Have you used or have you heard about Temu, this website, this Chinese website? Yeah. I went there like maybe a few days back. I think now they are running all those Black Friday promotions there. So when I logged in, when I like visited the homepage, a pop-up appeared. And what did I see? A Wheel of Fortune. And this Wheel of Fortune had like a lot of coupons. One of them was 100% free. So I clicked on that Wheel of Fortune and it turned. And then I got, it did not work. Try again. I tried again. And then I got 100% item for free. I said, what? What is that? So that means I'm offered a product without even paying anything. And I mean, it looked like that was the case. So I continued the journey and I added a couple of items in my cart from a list that they are proposing. And then I thought, that's it. I mean, I got these items for free. But then on my next step, they said, add more item. And I did add more item. And on the third step, I was supposed to buy something for 50% off to get the 100% free on the other items. And, you know, I then left the page. So, and I didn't buy, I ended up not buying anything. So this is an example where I think gamification backfired because I was misled in a way. And again, first of all, I want to hear your thoughts on that. And what do you think could have been done better for a successful gamification application here?
So the first thing is there, I think I don't know this. I haven't tried that. I think it was my wife who downloaded it to get one of the first items for free. And it's true that you can get, like, I think when you register for the first time, or it used to be that way, you did get something for free. And then she didn't purchase there anymore. Because again, it's transactional. If I register, I get something for free, then I'm not sure if I'm interested. And there's other things, like if you buy an Amazon, you get this Amazon and then these online retailers in general. If there's anything wrong with your product, you get a refund or they change it for you. These guys in Temu, they're the opposite. They're like the cheapest you can find, but something goes wrong. That's what I've heard. Again, this is not from experience. This is what I've heard anyways. So it's a different model, right? So that they're trying to sort of barge in. And it is true that these giants in e-commerce are going to be very hard to move from their spot. So that's one thing, right? They it is true that they sometimes do that. But then honestly, I don't think the Wheel of Fortune was a Wheel of Fortune. I think, you know, they did that sort of to get you into the thing and get you into the mood of I want something, right? And then try to trick you into something. And that's just dark patterns. Wherever you look, you find something where they're trying to trick you, that's just wrong. Whether they do it that way or through having a 500-page contract that they know you will never read, and then they do something because it's in the contract, and that's what they were always planning to do. I don't know if it's legal or not. I feel like if this keeps happening to a certain company and they always do this, I feel like, yeah, I signed it, but you tricked me. Like, eventually, they should be taken out of business just because they're doing it to intentionally trick people. It's harder to prove. But anyways, if your intention is to trick people, you're just doing it wrong. It doesn't matter how you are doing it. It doesn't matter if it's gamification, if it's whatever it is, right? So the first thing, and I think with all the examples, I tend to say this, and this is intentional from my side. When you're using it, you want to think of both your objectives as a business practitioner, professor, whatever you are, and wherever it is you're doing it. But you want to make sure you're thinking of what is the player getting out of it. And getting out of it doesn't mean that they're getting money. It doesn't mean that they're getting rich. Like, why would they engage in that? And would they engage in it if they knew, right, that you were tricking them? Because using these tactics or these strategies isn't a way trying to trick your brain, But I'm fine with it. Like, I want to learn a language. I'm fine with Duolingo tricking me into doing it, learning it more, better, or faster, whatever that is, right? Because that is my objective. When those objectives, when you manage to align, that's when in gamification, or honestly in any business situation, when you align what your customers are looking for and what you can offer, and you can create value and extract value as a company, because companies are there as well to make money, that is a good place. When something is breaking along the lines, or you're telling people that they're getting this, but then they're not really getting it, and you're doing this intentionally, that's where things go wrong.
That's initially, misleading, simply.
Midway, wherever that happens, there's a, I can't remember what was the name of the series, but there was this startup entrepreneur who was into the medical world, and they wanted to do sort of the tests, blood tests with a lot less blood,
yes,
a lot
Theranos.
Faster.
I think Theranos. Theranos, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure initially they had the best of intentions, but once you realize that you're tricking your investors and the public into doing things that you're not really
capable of doing,
well, you screwed it up. You know, that you have to turn back and say, look, you know, this is not happening. We have to stop here. Or, you know, this hasn't been working. We're advancing towards a solution, but we need more money. We need more time. And if we don't have it, we're going to have to stop. And it is true that if they were able to manage to do that, it would have been an amazing, you know, advancement in medicine.
Yeah.
But tricking people into that is just something, you know, again, there was no gamification there. They were just literally tricking people consciously. So,
yes. I mean, so the thing is, I mean, just to be fair, at the end of the day, I was not forced to buy anything because, you know, when I realized that I had to pay for something to get the 100% off on the other items that I initially added to my basket, I simply left. I mean, one way to improve that would have been maybe to mention in the beginning that I would get this for free, but I need to buy something. So if I knew beforehand what I was expecting in the end to pay for something to get the rest for free,
They were giving you 50% off. So if they start off by the 50% off, you buy the item. And when you're going off, they say, oh, look at the Wheel of Fortune. And if you win here, and I'm convinced that they were going to give you the 100% anyway, that is the place where you say, oh, next time, and maybe next time they give you nothing because that's sort of the way it works. But if you put it there, you're being more transparent. You're being more honest about it. And the thing is that they did use things. They were using the investment mechanic. You invested time. You invested your interest.
And I spent time on the website, right?
But you, like, you said no. But some people would say, you know what? I mean, if they were told all of this from the start, they probably would not have purchased.
Yeah, correct.
But
yeah,
they purchased eventually because they are already invested and they already liked the product and this and that. And they invested time in that. Oh, now that I'm here already, I was going to get it anyway, which was maybe true, maybe not. They are already invested in this. So they have, you sort of feel a little bit more ownership over this. So it becomes a little bit more valuable. Oh, if I leave now, then this is not going to be mine. And now
there's
it's
a lot
of
stake,
mine.
Right? Because I've added all this product. I've selected them from that list. I thought they were like completely free, and which they are. But then to get them, then I need to do something else, which wasn't disclosed beforehand. This is kind of what bothered me. And I said, I'm going to just leave. And then I don't need all these things in the first place. That's
you,
how I thought.
It was not a transactional thing. For you, it was more about the ethics behind what they were doing. You felt tricked.
I did,
And that's where, again, if you're doing something that's just transactional, well, you know, maybe people do it and say, oh, the transaction, they say, well, transactions still that make sense. Well, then you're essentially making an offer, right? You're putting a discount on things, which makes sense. That's part of the business strategy.
I think that Wheel of Fortune is still there because maybe they would keep it running for the whole of November since it's Black Friday. So if you have time at one point, just try it yourself and let me know what you think from the whole experience. But anyway, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about future trends in gamification. So Rob, how do you see AI and machine learning impacting gamification?
So the first thing is that I'm definitely not an expert in any of these. I probably should be because I'm a software engineer and I'm in the operations area and we do data crunching and we do all these things, but I haven't really dived into any of these yet. But I do think there's a lot of potential there. I've seen some are still pipe dreams. I have a friend who has a platform for gamification, and he was one of the things that he was trying to do, which I think it's just that we're not there yet. But I think we will be. And, you know, as fast as these things are going, you never know how fast it's gonna happen. It's things like creating personalized pathways semi-automatically. Like you have, you know, you in gamification, one fantastic thing you can do is personalize things. And of course, personalized and individualized are not the same thing. So the more you can be closer to individualization, it usually what it does mean is more work, right? So what if that more work, you can say, look, you know what, I'm not going to do more work. I'm going to put this here, this prompt or whatever. It's going to give me, you know, 10,000 scenarios where I can sort of check an overview and know that it's mostly okay. And now instead of having 10 scenarios built by myself, or maybe you build those 10 scenarios and say, you know, give me 1,000. Now you have 1,000, right? And there's where, you know, as with everything in AI, you can really make the best of a technology that allows you to you know, make the best use of your time or of your you know, your product, your money, whatever. That's something that I think could be very exciting, this side of personalization. And I know there's people sort of starting here. I haven't delved deep enough to tell you if it's really, you know, that personalized at this point or not. But I know there's people going down that pathway. And then the, you know, the general thing of, you know, AI is so helpful in so many ways. Like it helps. Well, imagery, I think, is something that is not there. You get weird stuff from all these apps. But there's other things where you get, you know, summaries, or, you know, you're going to do a gamified class and you tell them, oh, this is the overview of the things that I want to see. Can you write for me a lesson plan? And you get the lesson plan. And from that, you know, you already have more time available to think about not just the content, because in education it tends to happen a lot that we focus too much in content and then we forget about the delivery. You know, why would students be interested in this? You know, how would we get them engaged into all these things? And you sort of free up more time to think about these things and make learning impactful. Exactly the same happens in the business side. The AI is going to hopefully liberate more time and more bandwidth of people so that they can dedicate themselves to things that are more impactful that they otherwise just did not have time to manage.
I see. And Rob, what about then augmented reality and virtual reality? These are also different technologies that also, I think, have a big fit with gamification. So how do you see those impacting the sector?
We already have been doing a lot of that, especially in the training world, the professional training world, you know, depending on the context, of course. I usually teach at business schools, so I think they usually struggle to see what to do with virtual reality, because except for things like, I don't know, like public speaking, where you can practice in front of an audience and feel that and practice that kind of feeling, and they're probably having a good AI to be able to react to your speech, and all of that would be also very impactful if you sort of combine these two. But other than that, it's especially in fields like the medical world or when you're working with dangerous materials, right? Like how do you practice that without the dangerous material and still experience the screw up, the whole factory burning down because you did something bad without actually burning down a factory, right? I think there's a lot in that, and there's fun ways to do that. I think I tried to remember who it was that we were talking about something like this where you know, when things, you did something wrong within their simulation, things could get like catastrophic, but it was fun. Like you saw, you know, oh, you know, nuclear meltdown, you know, everything got screwed. You did this and, you know, half the world just got blown away because of your screw up. Start over and try again. And now you're not going to make the same mistake. You're going to learn. And that mistake did not happen in real life. I think training and learning have a lot in there. In other things, well, you know, I haven't thought about it too much, but I'm guessing that it depends on the physicality of things. Like if you're looking, usually when you think of virtual reality is how do you represent something physical that you would rather not move it to that place and putting it there? Where what are industries that would benefit from that? Things like that go all the way from clothing, for example, that I think it's still not there. Like you put your furniture from IKEA and you put it in a room. Kind of works, but it's still not, I think it still needs to be more accurate so that you really can get the feel of how that looks like in there. But it's getting there. And I think that's actually something that's going to happen really, really, really soon. How you can use that to say, oh, you know, or you create that and you create a real avatar of yourself and you give it different dresses, or you want to be, you have this game where you have this gnome and there's a gnome version of you. It looks just like you, but it has like pointy ears and it looks all green, right? And then you start adding those elements. There is where you can actually, I think, have a lot of benefit when you sort of try to bring stuff into the virtual world with without, you know, or you make, I don't know, like a cosplay convention without, you know, actually spending on materials that could be more sustainable, right? Because you invest a lot of time and effort, but especially in the materials that are kind of waste eventually, because then you use it and there's nothing to do with that. Use it once or twice. It's kind of wasteful, right? And you think of it and it could be impactful for those things. Or in viewing, like, for example, now I'm working with some people in the sustainability field. Like, you could run through scenarios of, like, why is being sustainable actually, you know, important? And you actually run people through things that actually happen, or you show them deeper realities that moving people around the world would not be basically feasible to do. There's one, I'm trying to remember which it was, that you're like a tree. Literally, there's a simulation where you are a tree and you start experiencing what happens when the forest burns. And there's a guy, like, this is not very...
That's powerful,
scalable, but there's a guy, like, giving you a heater around when you start feeling the fire is around you. Start feeling that there's fire around you. It's a very intense experience,
That's an extreme case of gamification, right?
Of course, the idea is to help people be conscious and aware of what are the situations where a forest fire starts.
Correct.
So, but again, it's very intense and it's not very scalable, but eventually it could be. Again, within safety measures and all that, but it could be something that could be very interesting.
Okay. Rob, for businesses who are just starting out with gamification, and maybe we can end on that, what are top three advice based on your experience and your long experience in the field that you would give them to set themselves for success? I know we've already touched upon a lot of these already, but if you want to really just like summarize that and then make it like, just three top advices, what would they be?
I think if you're getting started, the first thing would be to actually sort of either read on or in any way that feels right for you, do like real research on what is this all about and how you can benefit from that. Because if you just listen to the trends, and the good thing is we're not in the trends area anymore. Like, it's not, everybody is trying to say that they're gamification experts. Now everybody says they're AI experts. It's something else, at least. But now that we're outside of the trends, the good thing is that the people who are there and who are still talking about it tend to be people who are really into it. They really want to push the industry forward and have at least some relevant experience in this. So again, read a book or try to find whatever person or communities, for example, as well, where people are talking about this and seeing real life examples and all that, that you can perhaps relate to. That's the first thing that I would say, like, find something. And there you will find frameworks, methodologies, ways of doing the steps from, again, whoever you feel that you can trust in that world. And the next thing is to experiment. If you come into this with a mind of, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this once, and if it doesn't work, then I'm going to throw it away, then you're probably wasting your time. Because the truth is, just like in, you know, startup businesses, chances are you're not going to get it right the first, the second, the third, the fifth time. You have to experiment small first and bring that mentality of a scientist of, let me see what I got wrong.
Test and iterate. Test and iterate.
And you iterate and you say, oh, what worked, what didn't work? Let me see, how can I improve this? What from the other ideas I had that I didn't implement, which one can maybe solve the problem I found? And of course, experience helps make this easier, maybe faster, but it does, like, all the time when I create, I do the same thing. I start small, test out and see if it's working. I have a card game here that I used with my students. I literally used index cards to test it out first. That was the first thing I did. When it arrived to my students, I did get something like this, and this one is kind of broken. It got to be an actual card. Well, actual card. I printed this at home. Don't get me wrong. Like, eventually it will become maybe a board game or actual card game or so on, but I haven't gotten there. I'm experimenting. I'm testing out to see what goes wrong so that I can bring it home in the right way. And a third one, well, if nothing else, you know, I have a podcast, there's a community that I mentioned that I'm building. There's a lot of free resources out there as well. Like, you don't have to, and yes, there are people who are, you know, selling tens of thousands of dollars of stuff, which are great, don't get me wrong. But if you don't want, or you don't feel comfortable with a decision like that one at the moment, that's fine. There's a lot of free resources. There's blogs, there's my podcast, there's other podcasts as well. The community that I offered before is absolutely for free. There's a few Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn groups and all that, but they're not as active at this stage, to be honest. I wouldn't recommend them much right now. You're not going to learn too much. It's more for people who sort of are in the move to hang out and discuss. And there's a lot of free resources out there. Like,
Rob, can people find you? Can you spell again your website?
Oh, sure. So professorgame.com is the main website. If you want to go to the community, actually, I prepared a link that is straight for you guys. It's a free community. Anybody can join. It's at professorgame.com/IJK. As simple as that. The name of your podcast.
Very easy to remember.
Exactly.
/IJK.
Exactly.
Cool. What type of value or resources there people may expect finding there?
So the thinking behind it, at least at this point, hopefully this just gets to more or better. But the thinking behind it is a lot of the stuff that people pay me for in workshops and classes and all that, I'm putting it there. This community is lightly gamified. It's not. I don't want to say it's like super gamified because it's more of an people engaging with each other and how many likes you get is essentially you get points. That's how school works. But the more you progress there, you're going to get access to more things. So the idea is initially you're in there and you have these, at this point we have regular calls. They're just general Q&As. Eventually you unlock your product feedback Q&As with other members of the community. You start unlocking, parts of the course that I'm offering there. Eventually, if you really, really are into it, you spend there probably some time, you can even get a month or even a year of coaching from me one-on-one for free. Again, if you engage to that level with the community. So there's a lot of resources there. The idea is that there's other people who are into this as well, going through potentially the same journey that you're on. We have live calls, we have content and courses, and literally there's not too many places where you have access to me on a regular basis, especially now where we're starting. Like, if this group gets to be, 10,000 people strong, I'll be able to give some feedback, but it's not going to be the same as today where we're, today is 23rd of November. Right now it's 63 people. We just started, literally just started this week. So, the faster it grows, the more people will be there, adding more value, don't get me wrong, but it's not going to be the same sort of one-on-one access that you get to me at this point.
Cool. Well, you've heard Rob. It's professorgame.com/IJK. Make sure to join his community, and there are lots of freebies and lots of value to extract from that. And any final words, Rob? It was a very exciting discussion. I think this topic is really, really interesting, and I'm sure there'll be more to talk about that, or there'll be more to discuss in the future when it comes to gamification, especially in the era of AR, VR, and AI as well. So any final words?
Absolutely. I invite people to start seeing the world through lenses of games and gamification. If you see it that way, you'll start understanding things more. Gamification, if you feel, something about games and you don't like them too much, it's in the end, it's psychological strategies to help you engage, motivate, and get people to be loyal to something that they want to be loyal to. Because the ethics side that you mentioned before, I think is crucial. We didn't dive super deep. I have an episode just on ethics, and then I have a guest on the ethical side. I think it's super important. But in general, to be able to achieve those results, if you see it through the lens of games, I think you will benefit massively, because games have been doing this successfully for literally millennia. So there's a lot of lessons that we can take from that.
Well, great. Thank you very much for taking part today, Rob. And best of luck in your endeavors. And best of luck for Professor Game and the podcast that you host. Very exciting. Thank you very, very much again.
Thank you.